But in terms of what everybody calls Musar, we don't have a Seder in Musar. We have a different approach. The type of Musar that we, the way we approach it, is more like the Sunday morning shiur. You should come to the Sunday morning shiur, by the way. It's very important. Huh? The ideas and the values. I mean, it's a difficult area. Even we don't assume that just by abstract understanding, a person is naturally going to be perfected, his midos, to work on his midos. But we hold that it's an integral component. In the beginning is to try and understand. Because the obstacle, what pulls a person away, is because each person naturally is searching for that which he thinks is going to make him happy. Each person naturally seeks happiness. So the person follows his emotions. Not just because there is emotions, but his emotions tell him that this is the good. Yeah. So our shita is that once a person has true understanding of the good, and that's the whole idea of yadus. When a person really, that's why I placed before you, right? God in the Torah it says, right, that I give you the good, atov, v'achayim, good in life, and you should choose b'charta, b'chayim. Right, person should choose the good. But a person can't choose the good unless he has an idea of what it is. And when he has an idea of what it is, and he really sees it clearly, then he starts to perfect himself. Then he starts to move towards perfection. Without knowledge, though, it's very, very hard, especially in a society like this, society which holds out every other possibility to you. I mean, you have tremendous instincts pulling you there, and the whole society is in that direction. So without knowledge, it's very, very difficult. The person's going to be lost. So Hilchos Deos is very good, not just to learn an area of Torah, Rambam, but it's something which applies. The Rambam is talking about all of the midos that a person should develop. Now, we were going through the Koteres. The Koteres is the listing of the mitzvos. Before each section, this is the Rambam himself. The Rambam, when he went into an area of halachos, he first lists the mitzvos, the oraisa, that pertain to that area. So you see in Hilchos Deos, there are 11 mitzvos. As he points out, 5 asay, 5 positive mitzvos, and the 6 los asay. Alright, now I'm not going to go through the whole koteres now. We went through a few. Each one of them, just the consideration of what the mitzvah is, an interesting idea. For example, the first one, Lidamos Bidrachov, to what is the mitzvah? To imitate God's ways. I mean, what is that? Just the very to consider a thing like that itself is a astounding thing. You recognize that under this category is subsumed all of the basic ethical, so to speak, the ethical imperatives, to be merciful and considerate of others and so on and so forth. Tremendous amount of laws. You see, in Yadus is no inherent mitzvah to be kind, to be merciful, and so on. And all this is it's subsumed under a heading of to imitate God. That's the real mitzvah. Of course, that's a separate discussion. I'm not discussing it right now, because that automatically leads to a very powerful question. Question is, how can we possibly imitate God? It would seem to be an impossibility. Impossibility it would seem to be, because our concept is, A, that God is unknowable, we don't know God, and B, that the difference between a man and God is so great that it can't even speak about being like God, godly. It's just an impossibility. So what does it mean? But it has to mean something. All right, but I'm not taking that up today. I'm just trying to whet your appetite for the area. Then it says Li Davik Biyodov, which means to cling to his Yodov. That's God, those who know God. Which is another again, it leads to questions. I mean, just the study of the Koteres. Question. What kind of a mitzvah is this? To cling, yeah. What does it mean to cling? And why? What's the purpose of it? It turns out it means Talmidei Chachamim. So what do you mean to cling to them? Of course, we're supposed to have a relationship to Talmidei Chachamim. the relationship is one to be a student, to learn from them. What do you, is there something more? Isn't it sufficient that you get a Rebbe? A Selech HaRav, get a Rebbe and learn Torah. What do you mean cling? Moreover, and there's another problem with this. In the Torah, it doesn't say to you, where in the Torah does it say that you should cling? Does anybody know? That you should cling to those who have knowledge of God. Where is it stated in the Torah? Does anybody know? Anybody at all? What's the pasuk that it's based on? Uvo Sidbuk. Uvo Sidbuk, to cling to God. So really, it doesn't even state in the Torah that you should, it says you should cling to God. The Rambam quotes that pasuk. So then the question, of course, becomes, I mean, if we're supposed to cling to God, that's one thing. That has its own, but how does it turn out, right, that the mitzvah of clinging to God really means to cling to Talmid Chacham? I mean, what's going on here? All right, but we'll take that up on a different occasion. We work these things out in that Rambam group that I have in the morning. Here's the third one. This is the one I want to deal with today. Le'ahov es Rehim. What does that mean? Le'ahov es Rehim. Rehim. What does that mean? And neighbor means what? Basically, neighbor means fellow Jew. Let's stick with that. I'm not going to go into the whole question of our relationship to non-Jews. We'll just stick so far with Rehim. Now, this is based upon the pasuk that you're all familiar with in the Torah. V'yahav t'reich kamocha. Okay? Now, when you approach something, what's our method? You have to analyze it. What's the kasha? Everything starts with a kasha. There's always a kasha. That's the starting point. So what's the problem? Is there a difficulty with this, or does it make sense? There is a mitzvah. One of the Tayag mitzvahs is to love your neighbor. Now, by neighbor means any fellow Jew. Whether he's living in China or Ethiopia or whatever, wherever. I don't know what you're talking about. And I hope you don't as well. What's the problem with this? Hold on, let me answer. New fellows? Mayor, what's the problem with this? Does this make sense? When it says to love, to have an emotional feeling of love. If so, that would seem to be extremely, I mean, the Torah itself says, lo bashamayimi, right? It's beficha olavavcha lasoso. It's not in heaven, right? It wasn't given, the Torah was not given to the ministering angels. It's given to man. So it's to be something that's, all right, it's just not always easy. Although Moshe Rabbeinu was, right? Moshe Rabbeinu said, V'at Yisrael, Moshe Melkecha Dorish Mimach. What does God want from you? But to fear him and to do mitzvahs, to do the right, that which is good, right? So the Gemara asked. That's the Gemara in Brachas is like that. V'chidav Azutu, is that a small Moshe was talking to the Jews? In other words, in the sense, what does God want from you? If you take a look at the Torah, you see, it's any person would see that this is very easy and very good, and you should want to run to do the Torah. What is God demanding of you? So the Gemara asks, is it a simple thing to keep the Torah and to act justly and so on and so forth and not to just follow your emotions? So the Gemara says, and yeah, for Moshe Rabbeinu, it was a davazuta. For Moshe, it was a small thing. So apparently Moshe, it would seem from this that Moshe sort of couldn't really ascertain the situation of the Jews, how the Jews would react. For the Jews, it wasn't so good or simple. From the Gemara, it would seem that way. That Moshe was sort of projecting his own. For him, he couldn't conceive of not doing it. Everything was perfect, made sense. It was the correct thing. It was the best life. How could he not do it? The idea of not being in line with the Torah for Moshe Rabbeinu was preposterous. So he asked, but he was wrong. In other words, he was wrong because that's why Moshe Rabbeinu was so perfected. Was so perfected that for him, it was was easy. But we're not like that. They're not like that. Anyways, but is this what the Torah is requiring? That we have to have an emotion of love? How is that possible? How is it possible? And what are you going to say? You're going to force yourself? I love him. You can't force. I mean, how could you have such a commandment? Because you can't fake this. You can't fake this kind of a thing. So, I mean, either you do or you don't. Now, how many people in life does one really love? When you boil down to it, there are very few. Yet this would apply to a complete stranger. So, the question is, why? That's a good question too. Why? Okay, the why of it. That's a good question. Anyways, so the question is like this: what does it really mean? Does it really mean that one should love? Is this what it really means? So what is the answer? Pesiv basically has the answer. The answer is it doesn't mean that. Because the Rambam explains in Perek Shishi, if you take a look at Perek Shishi, that the obligation is not really to love. It doesn't mean literally. But really it means, take a look at Vav Gimel, mitzvah kol adam, it is a mitzvah on each person, lehov, he does use the term, of course he stays with the terminology of the Torah, lehov is kol echad v'yechad in Yisrael, kigufo, to love each and every individual of Israel, kigufo, like his own self. Shenema v'yahaf t'lerech kamochi, shall love your neighbor as yourself. Lefichach, then he goes into the explication of what it entails. Lefichach, therefore, tzarech l'saper b'shivcho. Therefore, he must speak his praises. Of course, speak his praises would only be where he knows his praises. He can't just... But here's the key, I would say. Velochos al mamono. And he has to be considerate and solicitous about his money. Kasher uchos al mamono nafo. Just like there seems to be the key. Just like he's concerned and solicitous about his own money, so too he must treat the money of his fellow man. Then he adds, he says, Verotze b'chvod atmo. And just like he's concerned about his own kavod. It means it was expressed by the Tanayim, expressed it, that which is hateful unto you, don't do unto your neighbor. In other words, what does it mean? What does it mean? I think Rav Chaim one time formulated it this way. In other words, the idea is that we recognize that it's not speaking about an emotion, but it's rather the recognition. Because each person has a certain emotional feeling about himself. It has to be the case. Everybody, it's not just part of them, no one should feel guilty about it because it's part of nature, the way a person is constructed. The way a person is constructed and the way a person is raised, and even if you, it doesn't matter, he has to have this feeling, he has an innate feeling that he's special and different and unique. Each person has this feeling. And it's a very hard thing. And of course, in childhood, this feeling comes out very strongly. Each child feels that he's the most important thing in the world. In fact, it's not something you remember consciously, but one of the developments of the psyche of a child is when he can distinguish between himself and the whole external world. He imbues the whole external world as an extension of the self, and the parents and everything around them is just an extension of the self. In other words, it's a very deeply ingrained phenomenon. Narcissism, selfhood, selfishness is a natural phenomenon, but it creates a illusion that you are more important. In other words, your needs and your desires, your wants are more important. And it takes the whole process of maturing is to, for a person to gain a realistic acceptance of the reality that his own ego has a certain place in the world, but it's a very, very limited one, and certainly nothing to do with his own emotional fantasy. But that's what the Rishayim are, people who never got over that, and they seek to carry out this idea that they are superior. Each person has this feeling. It expresses itself in many ways. It expresses itself in all the situations where a person feels he's entitled to more, and he can rationalize it away. His needs are more important than the other guys. Each person has a hard time even accepting the fact of death, even though he knows that everybody else that ever preceded him died. But somehow, I mean, this is a very hard thing to accept, because at a certain stage in a person's life, he feels that he'll be the exception. It sounds crazy when you talk about it on a logical level, but emotionally speaking, everybody in his own mind will recognize that he had this feeling. And this general idea, so therefore, in other words, he can't believe that the other guy is important to him. Even if he accepts the other guy, oh, his friends are one thing, because they're his friends, so therefore they help him out. But just every a stranger, I mean, can't be that important. And that's why when you read about events in the world, I mean, if things going on across the world, a famine, this and that, it doesn't really... that's them, of course. They're not important, so that's why they got wiped away in an earthquake. With me. Each person has a certain feeling. It's a very strong thing. A certain feeling within that he's God's favorite. That's why when a person suffers a misfortune, it's a tremendous blow to his ego, much more so than the physical thing. Now, the Torah is telling us that feeling is complete nonsense, and we have to recognize, the mitzvah of Yahav L'Reicha is to recognize that now, that there's no such a thing, but you exist only exist because of the will of God. And that will of God is not specifically just for you, it's part of a whole system, a whole universe, in which you have certain rights, right? Because you're part of God's system, and within that system, the rights of the other person are just as good as yours. No different. You're nothing special, and you're not superior within that system. So therefore you have to treat his, and you have to recognize that his needs are just as significant as yours. That's the idea behind it. that's a far cry, really, from love. It means to say a recognition, right, that the rights of every other individual are the same as yours. Really, by the way, if a person, you see how it relates to God. One who does not Makai, see, everything in the Torah is really relates somehow to our relationship to God. Because one who is not Makai in this is really, it's a denial of God. It's a denial, it's a failure to recognize God as the creator. In other words, you can only accept God as your personal. But you can't accept God as the creator of a whole system in which he's given the same rights to others, in which he regards others as just as important as you. So it's really a denial of God. Denial of God's rights. One second. Let me just develop. I'll have a thing like this. So I thought then at the end the Rambam says, "Miskave bichlon chavero elochel kol hava." You see, and that's already that's also an interesting thing, because you would, I guess, the average person would think that this is important. You know, benav mechayer is important. You should treat your friend nicely. You shouldn't embarrass him. And one who derives honor, who gains honor out of the embarrassment of his friend, is a low life and disgusting and everything. But that ain't no chelik olam haba. Just so you see, you have to also sense when you're studying. You have to be able to sense the things that are slightly. It's not terrible. It's not an illogical statement, but it's like seems a little bit harsh, doesn't it? Because why ain't no chelik olam haba? Why ain't no chelik? It's like you know what I'm saying. You can see that it's bad. It's a terrible thing. But why is Ein Lo Chelek Olam Haba? That's a very serious kind of thing. That would mean to say, by the way, this confirms what I'm saying, that the whole idea over here does relate directly to one's concept of God, because the essential perfection of the soul deals with one's correct knowledge vis-a-vis God, and the essential destruction of the soul is always with regard to knowledge of God. You see what I'm saying? So this means that this whole union over here is extremely important vis-a-vis one's relationship to God. Okay? So basically, I would say now we have a few questions. What are the questions? Well, let me tell you what came up. Something came up and the question was raised. Because I tried to give an illustration. I like to give an illustration. So when the Rambam used the expression that he's just concerned about his friend's money, so an example came to mind. The example was, I said, let's say you drive your car a certain way. It's your car. So when you drive your car, you're very careful. You slow down. You don't go over bumps. Right? You don't accelerate very quickly and then jam the brakes. You know, you treat your car very tenderly and very carefully, because that's your car. Now let's say that you borrow your friend's car. All of a sudden, you don't plan it out, but you just realize that you're not driving the same way that you drive your own. Now you don't mind, now you're can step on the brake a little bit harder, whatever it is. You say, how come? Now I'm sure you've all had this experience. No, well, whoever did, just let me know. I don't want to lend them my car, but but let me tell you this. All right, so of course you'll feel a little embarrassed, but let me tell you a case where I know everybody has done this or felt this way. You ever rent a car?
Yeah.
Oh, when a guy rents a car, it's a picnic, right? Now the guy is all of a sudden this very careful driver that'll never take his car past 35 miles an hour. All of a sudden he floors it and he turns and this and that and bumps. He doesn't care. Potholes, if he hits something, it makes no difference. What does he care? Right? What does he care? He's renting it. That's right. Exactly. Now the question is, even if you don't cause damage, if you cause damage, you have to pay or whatever. You took insurance, whatever it is. I'm not talking halachically. Let's say you rented it from a Jew. All right, so you'll say it's a guy, and what's the? Let's forget about that. I'm not going to get this. Are you allowed to do that? You are allowed to? He's giving it to you for that? Really?
Right. You're paying more for that use.
No, you're not paying. He's not. He doesn't want. I don't think any sane businessman would want his the thing he's renting to be abused.
Well,
it's not going to.
The thing is like this,
you're trying to justify it, which only indicates that it's a very powerful emotion over there. You're saying, well, it's already been, we're so corrupt, this society has reached such a state of corruption that it's already factored in.
He's not your chavera,
he's a fellow Jew. Would you want, now I'll ask you, excuse me, you have a business too, right? You have a business too,
right?
And you rent things out for a legitimate use, right? Now people could treat it in one way or another way. Now, it may be that you can't, I mean, because the rules, you can't specify the exact measure of treatment. But certainly, right, you would hope that people would treat it decently so you get it back in a decent shape and you can rent it. I mean, the more wear and tear, the more it's eventually going to cost you for either insurance, et cetera, right? So, in other words, legitimate wear and tear is okay, but if a guy takes the attitude that, what does he care? It's yours. It's not mine. I don't have to worry about it now. I don't care. There's no way I can get caught. So where's the v'hafta reich kamocha? You see?
Well, what people are arguing is that maybe the guy...
it's not saying that some people... look, you can argue all you want. You can argue all you want. But the point of it is, what I would say that a person is in violation of v'hafta reich kamocha. Because you wouldn't want yours to be treated that way. Even if you were renting it. You see? If you were renting it, you wouldn't want it to be treated that way. Well, go back to the case of borrowing. I mean, see, people have this. I'll tell you something that's important, practically speaking. For example, this is not v'af l'recha, but there's an inyan of baltashchas, by the way. For example, when you go to a hotel, first of all, I find in the yeshiva there's a tremendous amount of waste. People leave lights on all the time. They don't put it out, they're careless, this, that. And if they were paying the bills, you could be sure they'd be much more careful. It runs across the yeshiva thousands of dollars a year. And I always have to talk to the guy. Usually I'm always talking to the dorm guys, but it's not necessarily only the dorm guys. So first of all, a person that acts that way, that when he's in somebody else's property, is careless and much less considerate than with his own. So where's the v'hafta reich kamocha? That's exactly what the Rambam is saying. Just like you'd be solicitous of your own, now you're in somebody else's house. You feel free, you don't care, you're not that careful. So then you're being over on v'hafta reich kamocha. But there's another thing also, by the way. There is a concept of altashchas, which means to say that even if something belongs to you, you're not allowed to destroy it. You're not allowed to destroy things. You know, according to the Torah, and this is the Araisa, you're not allowed to just take it. Either you bought the shirt, and now you just tear it into pieces. Useless pieces, you're not allowed to do. That's altashchas. You're not allowed to destroy things, even if it belongs to you. Now, if you go, I know people go to hotels and they leave on lights or they don't care. And when I go to a hotel, I mean, no matter what I'm paying, even if you're paying a lot of money, when I leave, I make sure to close all the lights, unless you need one light when you come in, whatever it is. And it's not a matter of feeling. I mean, I hold, let's put it this way, that if you leave, like, you know you're going to be gone for hours, you leave the lights on or whatever it is that you don't need, air conditioning, just because there's nothing they could do about it. Sometimes they put up a sign, sometimes they don't. But it doesn't matter, you're destroying money. It's destruction. And the guy doesn't care. In fact, a lot of times a person either doesn't care. What do I care? I paid for the room. Yeah, but you paid for the room, but for the legitimate use. Now, what's not legitimate use should be preserved. Why should you destroy value over here? So, as I said, if you rented it from a Jew, you could be. It's a question of v'hafta reich kamocha. Would you want? You'll tell me you pay. Yeah, of course, there's no way he can stop you, because the way it's structured. But he's certainly it's costing him money, which is not. He doesn't mind paying if he's using it. But would you want? If it was you that was being rented from, and a person just left it on all day because he doesn't care about your money, so you're paying the bill for nothing. There was no real use. I say, A, it's waste. It's a question of baltashkos, and B, it's v'hafta reich kamocha. Okay? Everybody agree on that? Mm-hmm. Agree on that, right? So somebody asked me this question. One of the fellows from the group asked me this question. He said like this. He says, you're right. In other words, I should show the same regard for my friend's object that I show for my own. But let's say that's the way I drive my own. I'm not machmir. I drive my car this way, you know, and I don't really care. I'm loose about it. I drive a certain way. Let's assume it's not a destructive. I don't crash it. I mean, but I drive very carelessly. I'm not makbid and this and that. I step all the way and this and that. Now, when I drive my friends, could I drive it that way? If I drive the same way that I'm driving my own, am I being over on via hustler because I don't care about my car? Well, once he had raised that, we expanded it. We said, yeah, let's say he says makbid, the guy's covered. Just like you don't want to be embarrassed or anything like that, right? So you know you have to be solicitous about his cover. So somebody has the same question. Let's say you don't care. You know, I'm not going to cover. You can embarrass me. You let yourself be embarrassed. This and that. So now, could you embarrass the other guy? And if you do so, are you being over on behalf of Kamocha? You're treating him the way you treat yourself. That was the question. Such was the question. They're not in the exact words of the questioner. So that's the question. That's the first question that I want to ask. The next question that I wanted to ask is that it turns out, according to this, the way we've explained it and all, that there's no real mitzvah to love, right? The mitzvah is really a behavioral phenomenon, right? To show the same regard for your friends, right? To recognize his rights within the system, that they're not any less than yours. So I said, that's the case, it's something that bothers me. The first question was one of the fellows there. This question bothers me. It bothers me, so why does the Torah use, say something that doesn't mean? I mean, every word in the Torah is the word of Hashem. So it shouldn't say v'ahavta. I understand that in certain cases, the Torah had to use certain terms. It couldn't avoid it. And it can't be taken literally. I understand that. For example, when it comes to God. And God stretched out his mighty hand and smote the Egyptians, so we can't take it literally because we know that God is not the physical. But in any other case, when you have a complete discrepancy, for example, sometimes there's a total discrepancy between what the Torah says and what it means. For example, ayin taka zayin, shein taka shein, as you very well know, it doesn't mean literally an eye for an eye, it means the monetary compensation. Oh, but it's a good kasha. If that's the case, then why did the Torah say an eye for an eye? That's not what it means. Why does the Torah say one thing and mean another thing? There's an answer. The answer, in brief, is because the Torah is speaking in terms of absolute justice. In terms of absolute justice, the person really deserves to lose his eye. And in other words, in the ideal system, if a person showed such a disregard for his fellow man that he took out his eye, the really just punishment is that he should experience the same thing that he inflicted. That's justice. If that's the case, so why does the Torah allow monetary compensation? Because practically speaking, it's not feasible. The way man is constructed, it's not feasible, and a person couldn't accept it. Society couldn't tolerate it. So therefore, the Torah allowed him to make monetary compensation. Oh, but he had to write an eye for an eye to teach you the true idea. You see? That is the true idea. There's an idea over there. You see, there's certain cases where, for example, ben so remora, Gemara concludes, lohoi vo nivra. It was never was, never will be. But why is it there? Lilmo, to learn, because it teaches you important concepts. You see? So therefore, when a person pays the money, it's important for the Torah to tell us an eye for an eye. When he pays the money, he shouldn't just think it's a monetary payment. He should recognize that the money that he's paying is really in place of the eye, and he should bring it to heart that he deserves to lose his eye. He should regard it as though his eye is being taken away, and that's for his own kapara. That's for his own betterment. Also there we recognize that the Torah Shebichtav has to have a meaning. But over here, my question is, why is it using the term love? It's not it. It's not love. It's not the emotion of love. It should say you should treat your fellow man. Treat him properly or whatever. I don't know, whatever way God would have chosen to express it. But why does the Torah say something when it doesn't mean it? And the Rambam used the word lehov es kolecha ve'echav Yisrael kegufo. He should love him kegufo. And then we find out that all it means is that he should regard his property rights as being equal to his own. That's the second question. So those are my two questions. Let's return now to the first question that I asked. And the question is, suppose you don't show regard for your property. Now when you are using your friend's property, you treat it the same way. Would you be over on behalf of Rechma? Yes or no? You would, Mayor? Why? He'll make a good point. He'll say that you're not allowed to hit somebody. Russia, Lomasaki, you're not allowed to hit, you'll be mazik, right? Let's say you mazik yourself. Does that give you a right to mazik somebody else? But that's different. You'll be over there because that's a separate issur over there, right? Because when the Torah says you know it hit somebody else, it's not subsumed under this framework. It's not because you wouldn't do it to yourself. And when the Torah says you know it a murder, so let's say you're the kind of person that's going to commit suicide. So can I kill the other guy and then I committed suicide? No, Mahaba. You say, will I be punished? Of course. Because the other Torah didn't say that you can't kill him just like you wouldn't kill yourself. It's a separate thing. It's an absolute. So with regard to damages, you're definitely not allowed to cause damage. Here we're not talking about damages. We're talking damages, you're right. But we're talking about treating somebody else's property, right, differently than you would your own. Which indicates that you don't regard his rights as being equal to yours. Well, so the guy said, so what about if you don't care about your own? Or his kavod? You can't diminish his kavod. Just like you, like he says, just like you, Barosa, Bichvod Asmo, just like you want your own kavod. Also, let's say you don't care about your own kavod. So now when you are disrespectful to the other guy, are you being over on Viahavta? On this particular, we're asking. Facey, you had something to say, I think.
Yeah. Well,
very good. That's what your father said. We called him in. Yeah. Very good. You hear his teretz? You hear his teretz? Everybody? It's a very, very... In other words, it means they're like this. That it doesn't go object by object. You see? It doesn't go that way. In other words, if you don't care about this object, that's irrelevant. But it means you have to be solicitous, right, of his concerns, just like you would be solicitous of your own. In other words, just like in a thing that would matter to you, right? It happens that this doesn't matter to you. But if so, you have your stamp collection or whatever it is, or whatever thing it is that matters to you, you would want that to be treated in a certain way. That's the way you have to treat the other person's thing that matters to him. But it doesn't mean that it has to, you see, it doesn't mean that it has to be the exact same thing. It doesn't go by an object by object thing. It means you show the same regard for his concerns, right, as you would want that which is distasteful to you, as you would want with regard to the things that are of importance to you, whatever they may be. But if you're not interested in kavod, you don't care about kavod, so fine. But if you did care about kavod, you would want to be treated a certain way. That's the way you have to be treat your friend, since he is concerned about kavod. Okay, that's good. I discussed this in my shul on Shabbos. They raised this side of it. Let's say he doesn't care. He says, take the car, I don't care. Well, we said like this. I use another example. Let's say like there's two roads to get to the main drag, whatever it is. Okay? Now let's say there's a shorter one. Let's say there is a shorter one, a quicker one, but it's bumpy. And there's a longer one around, which is smooth. So since you care about your car, you take the longer one. Even though it's now you're borrowing your friend's car. So you want to save time. It's like 10-minute difference, right? Would you be allowed to take the bumpy road? No, it would seem no. In other words, just like when it comes to your own, you do the extra 10 minutes because you were... Oh, now, but the point is like this. If the person, it would seem to me, if the person tells you he doesn't care, in other words, if you ask, if you specify at the beginning and tell him, look, I usually take the other road because I want to save the wear and tear of my car, and I don't care about the extra 10 minutes. Now, what do you want? If you want, I'll do the same. Well, if he says, no, I don't care, I always take that road, then you can do it. Right? Then it would be absurd. I mean, it's his thing. You're treating it the way he wants it. You're treating his object the way he wants his object to be treated. That's fine. So what's the kasha? Did I answer it, or is there anything more? Okay, yeah, I would say you're right, of course. You don't have to be more makbid. One second. You don't have to be more makbid on a person's possession than he's makbid. You're showing that's what the Torah said, to show the regard that he, just like you would want what he wants if he doesn't care. If he doesn't care, fine. Now, the only time that would be a problem is if he is destroying, if you're doing something destructive. You see what I'm saying? In other words, he can't give you rishus to destroy his object, just like he's not allowed to destroy it himself. So that would be Valtashkas, yeah, but that's a separate issue. Okay. So that answers, I'm sorry?
Would someone be in a separate category at all?
I'm in everybody making fun out of everybody. So, I mean, you have to realize, even though it's Purim, I'm sorry?
Generally.
Even though it's Purim, I don't know that it gives a license to be over. I'm sorry? I don't know that it's out of everything, no. I've had problems over the years when the Grammen writers have gone too far, and therefore we were going to institute censorship of the Grammen. On certain cases, the thing is like this. I guess there's a general assumption that people don't mind. In other words, we're operating here. If let's say we're reasonable and we're rational, then there's a certain level of joking which is acceptable. So the guy's mochel, right? He doesn't mind, and quite the contrary. If he was left out of the Gromman, right, then he probably would feel upset because he's not part of the group. So, but there were cases that were on the borderline of being, you see, because there are certain things that a person doesn't mind you joke when you're with Gromman, you joke about it. So each person has certain things that are funny, and when they're a caricature, when, you know, you do an imitation of the guy or whatever it is, you make a character. What do? You focus. You exaggerate. You exaggerate that thing to the point where it appears really ridiculous. Because normally the guy is there and the guy is trying to suppress it. And everybody knows he's trying to suppress it. So in the humor is where you remove the suppression and there's the exaggeration, and that becomes his essence and everybody laughs. But there are certain things, though, that are painful to the person. Now, there were cases in the past where fellows asked me about a particular grommet, about a guy, whether it would be mutter or not to do it. And using my own judgment, there were cases where I said, I don't know if this could be painful to the guy. I don't know if this is a harmless type of thing or he'd regard it as really hurting. So I told them to ask the person. So they asked the person. I remember one case where they asked the person. He said, it's okay, you can do it. So, Ed, I guess, you know, when if he's mochel on his kavod, a person can be mochel on his kavod.
You know, but you see a lot of times, very commonly, people...
The next question that was, so what about the problem, though, of the lashon of v'ahavta? Why is the Torah using that? When the way we've analyzed it, as we've said, there is no obligation to actually love your fellow man as yourself. It's rather to regard his rights as equal to yours. That's what the Torah really means. So why does the Torah say something that it doesn't mean? That can't be. That can't be. Because the Torah is perfect. Torah is Hashem Tamima, Meshivas Nefesh. It's got to be perfect. It can't be. I mean, for want of a better word, Chas V'Sholem, you can't talk that way. Best word that could have been chosen, you can't talk that way. It's got to be an idea. Okay, Joey? The ideal, it was like this. In terms of the Kiyam HaMitzvah, to be Mekayim the Mitzvah, not to be in violation, if you haven't reached that level, as long as you treat the other person, even if you don't feel the love for him, you're not over. But the reason why the Torah says V'Ahavta is because it is possible. See, but let's just try and understand why we find it so difficult. I think that behind this, everybody, by the word love over here doesn't mean like romantic love. In other words, love over here means like a liking, like you like somebody, like David liked Yonasan very much, right? That's what it's, I think on the emotional sense, on the emotional level, we're not talking about love, that you have to love a person like you love romantically. All right? But the Rambam does speak about two kinds of love, you see? Now, what determines how most people, their likes, who they like and dislike? Everybody, right? Everybody has friends that they like. Everybody has people, right? Certain attachments. Now, in most cases, you'll see that it's based upon, it's an emotional thing, and it's an emotional thing which is based upon the accident of a person as opposed to his essence. See, in other words, most people relate, their social relationships are based upon accidents. Who do you like? And people, you know, you see little cliques form. How do cliques form? They form around what? Just say people have the same accents that you have. You see, when a person finds someone who has like a different taste and different ways and this and that, in areas which are, as I said, accidents, not part of the essence of man. Ways of doing things, you know, manners or his personality or his style. I'm sorry? Or still other things of... that's a different issue. That's people that want to be an elite. But to mean a taste, what he likes and dislikes. Well, he likes the same thing. He feels exactly the way I feel about the Knicks. Or he feels exactly the way I feel about the cars. You know, like we feel alike. We feel alike. We have the same. See, that's what makes the person get so excited. He finds someone that feels the way he feels. And that's why, you see, when a person comes in and he acts strange, his actions are strange. Which one is this? Good vibes, right. That's the way most people's relations are based upon that phenomenon. And when they dislike a person, they're strange. Why are they strange? Because they're not in tune. Why aren't they in tune? They just, the way they do things, they're not like we do things. It's usually based upon purely accidental, irrational things. And if you look at each, you know, each group has its own habits, its own cultures. These things are nothing special, but each person feels that they're unique somehow. See, the Torah, when it comes to a fellow Jew, you're not allowed to base your attitude and your relationship to a fellow Jew on these things. And the reason for it is, you see, because it's a denial of the essence of man. That the essence of man is the Tzelem Elokim. An interesting point you find in Vayechi, by the brachos of Yaakov. So it's interesting. First of all, you see that the brachos included Klolos as well. Because it's Orer Apam Kiyaz. Shimon and Levi curse their anger. So first of all, what is a curse doing? It's supposed to be brachos. So I'll answer that very briefly. The answer is because it's really a bracha. In other words, when a person, what is a bracha? A bracha is like a situation. It's a means, a situation or a communication, right? Which serves to raise a person to a higher level. So tzaddik, a person that's really interested in perfection, for him, a timely and accurate criticism is the greatest bracha. He welcomes that more than a pat on the back. You see? The Rambam said that anybody that will show me a defect that I have a criticism, they'll love that person. Because that's the most important thing in terms of his perfection. So that's why it's part of the brachos. He was able to pinpoint a vital piece of information which was essential to their perfection. That's a bracha. To be able to have somebody that could look into you and show you a defect and how it's harming you, that's a bracha. Now, the wording is very important. The Rashi says he cursed their anger, or Apam, he cursed their anger, but he didn't curse them. He didn't curse them. So on the surface, it seems like funny. What do you mean? That's them. I mean, that's, let's say I criticize something about you, you know. Like I talk about your stupidity, and I say, look, I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about your stupidity. You feel very good. Thank you very much. It's not you, it's your stupidity that I'm talking about. You try and tell it to someone, you know. You criticize someone about their foolishness. I'm not talking about you. I'm not criticizing you. I'm criticizing your foolishness. I know, but that's my foolishness. That's me. How do you make the... What do you mean over here? But it's a vital point. It's a very vital point. I think the point is like this. You see that one of the hardest things in the world is to accept tochacha. Very hard. It's a big mitzvah. Hocheach tochiach. To rebuke. And today people don't do it. We live in a phony society. And you see, people get together and they're completely phony. They just, it's like mutual admiration society. Each one tells the other what they want to hear. So in return, he'll tell him. And basically, the mutual pact is that everybody will only say the nice things about them. You see? And in return, you'll only say nice things about him. And you'll suppress. Nobody wants, look, I know he has to see. I don't want to say anything, you see? Then it turns out that the only one that points out people's defects is Rabbi Mann. That's the,
People do it. They just don't do it in front of
them. They just stand for asshole. Ah, they notice them, but they won't do. What good is it? It's a very hard thing. It's not easy to do, by the way. The Rambam said, I mean, if you don't know how to do it, you shouldn't do it. You're just going to cause. You shouldn't go out now and start telling everybody what you really think of them. All those defects. You have to know how to do it. Now, there are certain points over here that are that may be of benefit. Because, you see, Yaakov was being a mochiach. And obviously, he knew what he was doing. And then Rashi would not have made a point of it unless it was very significant. Or Apam. He cursed the Af, but not them. That must be very significant. Now I say like this. I think the idea behind it is, why is it that people have a difficulty accepting criticism? That's a natural thing, because each person has an ego. Right? So he's defensive. He doesn't want his ego torn down. But the thing is like this. The reason why a person, see, if you criticize a person in a way where the person senses that it's an attack upon his essence, then he becomes very defensive, then he can't tolerate it. Because a person can't take the idea that his whole essence is corrupt. If you tell a person, you can tell a person that something which he doesn't really regard as being close to his essence, he can accept. Right? Some people, it depends on the person, some people you don't like their clothing and this and that, they get upset. But that's absurd. I mean, the average right person on a high level wouldn't mind, right? You don't like my shoes. So what? It's my shoes. It's not me. You see? As you get closer, you see, then you make a comment about his looks. Right? That's already more touchy. But really, a wise person knows that his physical being is not him. The real him is not the physical. You see, you talk about his emotions, it gets even worse. But again, the point of it is that there are two things that are necessary, I think, in order to be mochiach. First, the first thing is that the person is convinced that the one who's saying it is purely objective. You see, that's why Yaakov and Moshe Rabbeinu also, they were, Rashi makes a point of this, they gave their tochachos right before their death. And Yaakov said these things right before, because at that time, everybody recognized that he's not involved anymore. There's no personal axe to grind, he's withdrawn from the scene, and he has the ability to look at things from a different perspective. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, though, that you have to reassure the person that you're not making a statement about his essence. That you have the ability to distinguish between your essence, the real you, what constitutes the real you, and the accidents. And that's what he was telling them, that the essence is really good. Yetzelem Elokim, that part of you which can perceive reality is intact. You're a good person. Except you should be aware that there are certain accidents. You have certain emotions. Each person has emotions. And you happen to partake of a particular emotion which can be a defect, which if you're not aware of, that's that eyes, that anger, that revenge. They acted in revenge. So they had even tzaddikim have emotions, and they have to be made aware of it. See? So they were able to accept it because they had the ability to distinguish between accident and essence. Now I'm saying that most people make the mistake of elevating the accident into the essence. The real essence of the person is his accident. Well, that's today's society. Who do they were? If a person is a ball player, person's a ball player. It's purely an accident. It's not the essence of man to be able to throw a ball through a hoop and jump and stuff and this and that. All the person can do. So people that they identify, and that's why. I mean, actors, all the people that are respected, given tremendous respect, and they're listened to and honored and everything. It's all because of accidents. This is they've elevated accidents, you see? And it's a denial of the essence of man. Of course, a person who has a good essence, who's perfected, but does not partake of these accidents, nobody could care about it. It's not really, I mean, people pay lip service. Now, what I'm saying is like this, that the real mitzvah is v'ahavta. That once you have a genuine recognition of the true essence of man, and you recognize that everything else, the emotional and all the other things, are just accidents, so then you can reach a level where you relate to fellow human beings in a totally different context. That you relate to him purely on the basis of his essence, Tzelem Elokim. Therefore, every Jew represents something. He's a Tzelem Elokim, and he lives within the framework of a certain system. And you have a natural, like Rich was saying, the Rambam talks about, there's a natural identification, there's a natural feeling of love that you cultivate. When you've reached that level, you see, then the Ahavta L'Reach Kamocha means that your love, your emotions of love, liking and disliking, is no longer rooted in this infantile mechanism of accidents, of being in tune. But rather you're on a totally different plane, you're on the objective plane. And you can recognize when you deal with another person, you immediately dismiss all the extraneous, all the accent, and you recognize that the essence is a Tzelem Elokim. And then the after, then the Torah does have, there is a, it's meant to be taken in its literal sense. The Torah had to say V'yachlo Reich Kamocha, because that's behind the whole thing. Behind the whole thing is to remove yourself from that egocentricity, and that's the whole idea. Why? Must you recognize his rights as being equal to yours? Because that's infantile, to be rooted in this infantile egocentricity, and to raise yourself to the level where you're relating to a person on the essence, on the basis of the essence, which is Tzelem Elokim. That's why we have to work. Okay, we'll stop here.